Hello and welcome to episode 109 of Muse on Minis. Keith, wake up. I know you're jet lagged, but we need you, buddy. The people have demanded. They want to know all about the WTC. Come on. Keith.
Dude, I like how people were defending me about Russia totally being part of Europe.
I knew that.
Part of Russia is part of Europe.
I know.
Most of it's in Asia.
Most of the population lives in Europe.
Whatever. This is Fat Asian, and I play Protector to Menoth, Scorn, Minions, Legion, and Convergence of Ceres.
We need to play less things, all of us.
Whatever. I played 13 games this week, buddy. How'd you do? Boom.
I think I played two. Yeah.
I play exactly one faction.
Yeah, good on you.
And this is Josh, I play Mercs.
I mean, Rulik's a separate faction, though, right?
I don't play Rulik, and no, it's not.
Oh.
Just as a warning, we are missing Chad this week. He's in Portland at a wedding, so he went directly from, I guess you guys flew back from Amsterdam?
Yeah.
Amsterdam to Chicago, I'm guessing, to Portland, to a wedding, back to Des Moines next week.
Yeah. And I'm Colin. I play Scorn.
And I'm Crump. And I play Circle.
Roboros.
And Benganza.
Desara.
No, you don't.
And everybody knows our guest of honor?
Meh.
Keith Christensen, who plays Crix at the WTC.
John is introducing Keith. Yep. Yeah, Keith is too lazy.
Sweet.
Okay. We're off to a great start. This is amazing.
I'm trying to hold it together right now.
So, John, tell us about the WTC.
I'm struggling.
How was your round one?
I wasn't good enough to go over there and be part of the WTC.
You didn't apply.
You didn't volunteer.
There is that.
You also picked everyone that went over there. You specifically hand-selected.
I did not pick everybody that went over there.
It was all John.
He formed a committee just so that he could help his friends out and send them to Europe to exclude the real good players from the country so that they couldn't go.
Which is why we didn't get first.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is why I didn't go.
I think if Colin went, we would have got first.
Yeah. John, do you think that the WTC committee will be as unfair, biased, and display the same kind of favoritism next year?
Yes, I do. I actually do think that.
Good job for owning up to it.
You know what's not funny? Is somebody's going to hear that and go, wow, those a-holes.
That individual may have a very poor sense of self.
Well, here's the deal.
And
there's going to be people that tune into this podcast specifically because it's about the WTC.
That's true.
And they're not going to know what sarcastic a-holes we really are.
Okay, so here's a tip for the people who are listening to our podcast for the first time. If it's not specifically about gameplay, it's a load of BS.
That's a good tip. But some of the gameplay tips can sometimes be a load of BS.
A load of BS, yeah. There's a lot of...
That is why we have a series of fact checkers to make sure we get it right.
I think we just like to think of ourselves as, like, we want to engage you mentally, so we throw up a bunch of red tape that you have to sift through and cut through to find the real gems. And that way, it's a good mental exercise for you. It's great mental exercise for us.
No one's buying this.
I'm not even buying this.
It's like how...
I know, and if Colin's not buying it, no idiot out
there. That's true. Yeah, it's like how Wizards of the Coast was just like, we print really bad cards as skill testers.
As skill testers?
Yeah, they're like, it's an important aspect of the game.
Or they print really bad cards for glory seekers.
No. They print really bad cards for filler.
Right.
So they don't have to play test them. They're just like, well, we know that's garbage.
But it's not called filler, it's called skill test.
No, it's filler. It's 100%. Look, there's more cardboard I can sell you that you...
I choose to view it as glory seekers.
Why are we talking about Magic? There's a big event that happened over in Belgium.
Dude, let's just keep talking about Magic. He's fine with
it. So I went to the WTC.
He jumped in.
I had an absolute blast. Good times were had by most, I feel. special, I guess, I'll just jump into talking about some of the people that I met that I particularly enjoyed. As predicted, the Irish were amazing.
I'm so jealous. I would love to have hung out with the Irish. They just seem like really cool cats.
Yeah. Did they maintain their anonymity throughout the entire...
No, they failed horrifically by being the loudest, drunkest people there.
Well, they were just like...
Keith, that's so racist.
Here's a list of names that could be our names. We're Irish.
I wanted them all to show up with, like, glasses that were just, like, a black bar over their face.
I wanted them to show up with brown paper bags and holes cut out for the eyes. That would have been amazing.
Jerk.
So let me see if I can get the names right. There was an Owen.
Owen, yep.
A Kieran.
Charon.
Charon.
Kieran. Kieran, I think is that.
Kieran.
Like the Japanese beer.
This Kieran. One I got, though. Jerry.
Yeah. Fucking Jerry.
Stew. I can do a stew, right?
Yep.
This is all by
Stewart's not a real Irishman. He's from Virginia.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Wait, does he have the accent?
Who's the fifth person? I'm missing one. I've done...
Anto. Anthony.
Very cool. Sorry, Anthony. I didn't have you off the tip of my tongue. Wait. Phrasing. Anyway.
The guys from Denmark were sweet. Most of the... I'd have to double check some of the names. But, Paul, who is an Englishman initially, has moved to Denmark. He was particularly... He grabbed me right away and apparently explained that based on some joke that I don't even remember making on the podcast, my name has become synonymous with racism.
Weird.
In the Denmark War Machine community.
Really surprising.
You know what's really great?
Instead of saying that's racist, they say that's Keith?
Something along those lines.
But I mean, think about it. There's like 100,000 jokes on the podcast that they could be referring to. We have no idea of telling which racist...
It was something about, I think it was actually you that made the joke, because it was something about...
That doesn't seem like
the Denmark teams being named black and white, and the Denmark black team couldn't possibly have any black people. I don't remember. Something. I made some comment about the entire population of Denmark being white.
No, you actually did.
I'm not racist in the slightest. You're
100%,
so I can't
you're white.
Possibly.
You can't not be racist. It's impossible.
I bear my white guilt, okay? I labor underneath it.
But that was not the best part of the Denmark trolling. The best part was that while my name has become synonymous with racism, another American team member's name has become synonymous with takebacks. A lot of those like little shifts that you do when you like run a guy and then move him back 4 inches. Whenever they do that, they go Pagani. So we've all adopted that. And I did do my best to disseminate that into our meta.
All right. Did you guys hear that? Whenever there's a little minor take back, it's called a Pagani, right? Yep.
And you have to raise your voice an octave when you say it.
Pagani.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's hard for you to go up.
So when you make a racist comment, it's a Keith or is it a Christensen?
I think it's a Christensen.
Sure. I'm not sure. I don't. They just called me racist all weekend. They're just like, you racist. And I was like, I guess.
I feel like most people who go overseas and get called racist all week would not like come back and tell their friends about it.
You think they might? You think they might cause them to evaluate their life a little bit? Yeah. You know, it causes one of those moments where you're like, self, maybe we haven't lived correctly. Somewhere we did not make that left turn at Albuquerque.
Or
like, I don't know.
The correct response is. At least I let non-white people into my country.
Well, actually, it turned out that the captain of that particular Denmark team was Indian.
Nice. That's nice. Not...
And when Paul said, well, Paul's words were, as close to black as we could get.
All right.
Oh, wow.
Amazing. Did you get to see Maudlin at all?
Yep, Peter was around. Busy, but he was around.
I'm sure
he was around. And Norbert, of course. Good to see those guys.
How about those English?
Those guys. No, I like. I got to hang out with them and play some Cards Against Humanity with the English versions, which unfortunately you don't get some of the jokes because there's like names from their news
right.
Things that happen.
You're just like throwing random cards in. You're like,
they're
celebrities.
Like, I think,
you're
well,
like,
they're celebrities.
Be
and then there was like a Madeleine McCann, I think, which is apparently a very famous missing persons case where like a 6-year-old disappeared. And that was used as in a particularly... After dark worthy.
Sure. Everyone's bursting out laughing, and you're just like,
I was like, who's this?
And they're like, it was a 6-year-old, and then you cracked up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because it turned into a child molestation. It turned into a child molestation joke, and that was funny.
Yeah,
it was a 6-year-old girl who went missing, and like one of the other cards. But never mind.
The rest of the cards didn't even matter. I just laughed at 6-year-old girl went missing.
Actually, I think you probably can get that reference if you listen to the Epic FM. Official WTC podcast, because you're quoted in that 100 times saying something from Cards Against Humanity, and I think...
Yeah, well, they had they put the recorder in front of me while I was reading through... Well, I was actually, when I had the black card and was reading through the possibilities out there.
Oh, that's the one where they've got it posted, the official WTC
That podcast is actually quite good. It's probably the best one I've heard of a live event, kind of thing. And Matty K was the nuts.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I saw them recording while I was bumming around with the Irishman. Yeah, halfway through that Cards Against Humanity game, I just brought in the Irish to stand behind me and be like, what is this one?
Nice.
And then Owen would be like, no, that's too subtle for this crowd. Go with the pedophilia.
Perfect.
And then it worked better.
Yeah. It worked better. Well, that sounds very similar to home then.
Right? Only here we do things like Bukkake and...
No, that's in your other home. Your Asian home.
Right. Anyway.
Let's see. Who else?
Oh, dang it. No, Christensen. I messed it up.
Yeah. Oh, and I got to see and spend some time with Ricard and his team, too.
Oh, I love that guy. They're the Swedish team, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with yes.
They got second? Third.
Got
third.
Third. He went 4-1 with Gators.
Indeed.
At the WGC. That's, he's...
And he made the cardinal mistake of dropping Maylock against...
Doomshaper 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as he said, no, I dropped Maylock, I'm like, what? How do you crack all that?
If Force Lock wasn't a thing, that might be okay to just go hunt Doomshaper, right? Run past the Beast Break. And,
yeah.
Maybe.
I could see it.
Still a wall.
When you, it, doesn't he make him incorporeal?
Yeah.
Right?
Mulk has got a magic stick. Charge.
Yeah.
Also that.
So if they charge through Mulk, he's going to brain them with his magic stick.
That's legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that matchup.
Also, the stone can spirit chase.
Also true.
No, yeah. They're only incorporeal on the one turn, right?
Yeah. And they lose it when they get near the stone.
Yeah, all the stone, or, the stone every turn is just like spirit chaser.
Yeah.
Don't or think Mulk, that would happen very often.
Oh,
that was the matchup.
100% that would happen in that matchup. What else are they going to do?
I'm just saying that a lot of times troll players don't think about using that.
At the WTC.
Yeah, this is the WTC.
The
and
WTC.
And it's also Flanzer.
Yeah, I'm 100%.
Yeah,
oh, I wouldn't have.
I 100% would count on my opponent understanding what my feet does in making my entire army incorporeal.
Mm-hmm.
No,
you would think that, but there's like pro players that when they play against something new for the first time, they just have no idea. Look at you.
That is how you caught Jake Van Meter off guard.
Yep.
Anyway, as a Merc player, Ricard is my hero.
I love Ricard.
Yep.
Not only that, but he's just a fun guy to hang out with. Pretty sweet. We met him at Lock and Load?
Yep. Nice.
Yeah. I was talking to him on Facebook, actually, about that game with Flanzer, and he was like, oh, man, you got to get over here to the WTC. It's so amazing. I got my stuff absolutely shoved in by Flanzer, and I smiled the entire time. It was so much fun.
That's a good attitude.
Yeah. Well, it's just he was having a good time. Yeah. Apparently, the vibe in the environment was amazing, is what I heard.
It was a lot of fun. It was a good time. They had the bar was open all the time, so that was helpful.
Was it an open bar?
No.
Aww,
it was €10 for a drink ticket that gave you a whole bunch of stamps, and it was like 4 stamps for a beer, or whatever it was. So it ended up being pretty cheap, but.
And let's emphasize, they were Belgian beers.
Yes.
Yes.
Did you bring any back for Josh?
I brought one.
You should have seen the list of beers that Peter sent me that they left over there.
Ugh.
Something called Delirium. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, we have that at where I work.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, a lot of stuff he would have brought back. I did. I'm pretty sure that Chad's phone wasn't working, but I sent both Chad and Keith a list of beers to look for, and it was probably like a page long. I don't know if either of them got it. Sadly.
So next year in Poland, is there as many good beers?
No.
I believe as what some of the other European guys described to me, the distinguishing factor of Poland is that it's like, what was it? I think it was one of the British guys, based on the currency they were using, were like, it's 50p for a bottle of vodka.
Yeah.
So that's like $2.
Not even, I don't think.
What?
50p is like 50 pence, which is half a pound, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I'm sure people are on the forums will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's a half a pound, so that's like a buck.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, isn't a pound like almost $2? Not anymore?
Wait, the cheaper...
So a half a pound would be like a buck.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah. All
right. The closer you get to Russia, the cheaper the vodka gets, right?
I mean, it's... I'm sure...
Basically.
I'm sure that's a generic sort of... Yeah, but I mean...
Well, when you get across the border, it just is free.
It's just always... Like, yeah. It's always interesting to see different... Like, in Spain, you can just go into, like, any convenience store and buy, like, a bottle of wine for, like, $2 or $3.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... It just depends on what...
When you cross the border into Russia, they hand you a bottle of
wine. They hand you a basket.
You're gonna need this.
They hand you a basket of vodka. Actually, the traditional greeting in Russia, I think, is bread and salt.
And... Is the bread soaked in vodka?
It can be. Anyway, WTC, you were in like a, you were like repurposed military bunker or something like that. Was that?
Yeah, I think it was an old decommissioned military base.
Yeah,
it turned out to be really, really good for the event because it was like War Machine summer camp.
Yeah, because you guys were all like in bunks.
We were all
like,
in
right?
bunk beds.
Yeah.
Which were kind of a pain to climb out of. Not so much. You could get into them. Like, getting into them was not a problem. Getting out of them.
How many Irishmen to a bunk bed?
I never went into the Irish.
Oh, that seems like a good idea.
It ended up just being all 10 U.S. players were in the same bunk. Not the same.
The same bunk? Sure.
Naturally. The same bunk.
And Pagani just got married, but, you know.
What happens in Belgium stays in Belgium.
Sure.
That is not true.
and then there was just, like, a cafeteria. That we had for food.
So it was basically salute your shorts with War Machine.
What?
Dang it.
Yes. Just say yes and move on.
Just move on.
Okay.
Yeah. How do you not remember that show? Were you a child in the
90s? I have no idea what you're talking about.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
What?
Anyway. Yeah.
So let's talk about WTC. Your first round, you get paired up with Team Ireland.
I was the best.
Yeah?
I was so happy when I heard that come down round one.
You were like, they're so drunk. This is going to be easy.
They weren't drunk quite yet, but...
They were hungover, right?
Actually, I think Jerry was. I'm pretty sure Jerry was drunk. And this podcast is going to be a little bit explicit because I can't avoid it when talking about the Irishman. It's just not possible.
Sorry, Lance.
So we sit down first round and we go through the pairing process and it ends up being, let's see if I can get this all right. I'm not going to.
I have it right here. Hold on. Give me a second.
The internet will save Keith.
Indeed.
By the way, Lance.
So round one, it looks like Mike Puryear playing Harbinger against Madrak 2 from Stu.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say Mike against Stuart, me against Anthony.
Billy
Denegra 2 versus Denegra 2.
Billy against Jerry.
Is Billy playing Jerry? Okay, that's
yeah.
Right.
Haley 2 versus Thagrosh. Craig was playing Kruger 2 versus Verseth, and Chad played Doomshaper 2 into Cromac.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Like I'm interested in how the pairing process went. Do you remember? Can you give us a breakdown on how the pairings, like how you guys determined your pairings?
No.
That's fine. Okay. Just looking at the pairings, it would appear to me that Mike has got a really advantaged matchup in Harbinger versus Madrak 2.
Yes, we won the round, so they put down. He put down the. They put down trolls, so I put down myself and Mike, and they selected Mike, which left me on the table, and they put down Anthony and must have been the circle player.
They put Owen.
Down Anthony and Owen, and I chose the mirror.
Yeah, Cromac's no fun.
And then with him left out, I put down Chad and Craig. And he chose not the mirror, and then I got to select the final two.
Yeah, so winning the roll actually is really huge because you get to pick the last two matchups.
Three matchups instead of two.
Yeah. So
getting to pick the last two exactly is kind of a big deal.
It is kind of a big deal. So just looking at the matchups, I feel like Mike's got an advantage over Madrak 2. Doomshaper 2 versus Cromac.
Why do you say...
I just think Harbinger's pretty good against Hordes in general.
Because I feel like I've watched Chad play that game, and I didn't...
Chad against Mike at Mayhem Cup.
Yeah, and it wasn't...
It was Borka, but...
No, well, that... I mean, this is Madrak... Or am I thinking about Madrak 1 when I'm thinking
You've
about
seen it? Chad beat Mike with Madrak as well. That was in a practice weekend.
Right, yeah. And it didn't seem... bad for Chad to me. Particularly Bomber plus Madrak's Axe is rough for Arby.
Yeah, I guess. Except that the, at least with Mike's list, the bomber's going to get shot off the table pretty fast. And they don't, it, Epic Madrek, as soon as the bomber goes away, like, there's not a lot to threaten Harbinger. I mean, the axe is bad, but there's no Mauler Animus, so you can, she can just tank that. And then they have no real way to get through the errands.
Fair enough.
I don't know. What do you think, Keith? Did you feel pretty good about that matchup?
I mean, Mike asked for it.
Yeah.
So.
Doomshaper 2 versus Chromak.
Anyway, I'll just go through how the game sort of turned out. I think Mike just ground through his game fairly quickly. His was not the first game done. The as we were deploying, and I'd finished all the paperwork that goes with being... Mostly captaincy is paperwork, by the way. It's a bad gig. So as we were sitting down and starting to deploy, I hear from the far end of the table where Billy and Jerry are playing. During the very first turn of the game, Jerry starts moving models, and I just hear, "Fucking shepherds!" As they had apparently failed. One of his shepherds had failed the first turn command check.
Because he put an extra for a second? Or an extra thags?
Later, I believe I found out that he was not playing any abomination-causing models and was just taking a terror check from a throne or Thagrosh or something. So Jerry may have already been drunk.
All right.
This model will activate. Oh, command check! From what?
He just wanted to play a clean game, you know? If anything could have scared it, he needed to take
it's
that into
like,
account.
Look out, there's a tree over there. Bah!
Yeah.
In Craig's game, it sounded like he just feeded for tempo and then hunted Rasheth down with Woldrimp, just concentrated firing.
He was playing Epic Kruger.
Yep. And the turn that he killed him, like the Woldrimp opened up on Rasheth, and then Kruger was shooting Rasheth, but he also had the option after shooting to telekinesis Gedarix into combat with him.
It's a good option.
It's pretty dead.
I would take that option.
It's a pretty dead tubby.
Yeah.
That's
Rasheth has that -1 dice.
He's
though,
got impervious.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't sure about the Woltrim shooting.
Of course, he's only armor 4.
Yeah, concentrated fire. It's like dice -2 on 1d6, and then dice -1, and then dice +1, and then dice +2. Still does quite a bit of damage.
When he's def 10?
Yeah.
I mean, they're gonna hit him.
There wasn't a Kriya.
But 1 dice damage just at dice -2 initially doesn't seem amazing. But.
No, it's death by 1,000 paper cuts, but right. That's exactly how you want to kill a horse caster.
How you kill a warlock, yeah, for sure.
And then in Chad's game, he alphaed Mulg into Gedarix and ate him. And then I saw two... And then I was playing my game, and I hear Chad go, Keith, look at this. And I look over, and I see two stalkers in front of Mulg, and Mulg is not dead.
Oh, no.
And checkmate.
And then Mulg ate both of those stalkers.
Oh, that's poor dice.
That is very bad dice.
Were they primal?
I'm
sure one of them was.
I think one of them was, and then the other one didn't warp for strength, I think. May have been the primary issue. But
what else?
Yes, dice were poor.
Four.
Dice were bad, but Mulg lived and then ended up eating three heavies before finally dying to like a primal Gorax or something like that.
I'm thinking about in that matchup, like why he would warp for anything other than strength.
Was it a feral or a stalker?
It was two stalkers.
Because, like.
Yeah,
can you forget to warp?
No, you have to warp for something.
Okay, that's what I didn't know, if maybe he just didn't declare a warp and so he didn't get it or something.
Anyway, that seems good for Chad.
Yep.
How's that?
So after Mulg eats three heavies, you don't lose that game.
Yeah, that's
a pretty good point trade.
And then Mike had won his game. So
plus 21 even.
About halfway through my game, and I'm not used to being the last one done when I'm playing Denegra 2. I'd found out that all four of my teammates had won. So I was like, all right, pressure's off. But should probably still win this game. So I was playing against Anthony, and his list was, we were both playing Denegra 2. He had
miserable.
Raiders, Bane Thralls.
Did he have Nis?
Nis Hunters and Blood Witches? No. I feel like he did not have Blood Witches. I feel like Boomhowler. And I had Raiders, Blood Witches, and Bane Thralls. We were playing into the breach. Is that right? Yes. Pretty sure it was into the breach. The NIS were a problem for me because I couldn't really do... He was playing them pretty far back, which was intelligent. And I brain farted and I was like, haha, mini feet with my blood witches and run them past my unit of raiders out in front to threaten those Nest Hunters. And he was like, mark for death. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, my caster has that spell too.
Oh, that's a good answer.
And then the Nest kept shooting them up. But that did buy a turn. It ended up probably being the right call anyway, because it bought me the turn for the raiders behind them to run up and jam the Nest Hunters really very hard. So I'd also cleared the zone on the right side that turn with the other unit of raiders and the Bane Thralls following up and the sirens and lots of stuff. So I scored a point and jammed him up really to the point where I was like, feet or be jammed up forever. And he's accusing me in this Facebook thing of mind tricking him, because it probably would have been pretty intelligent rather than feeding there to ghost walk the Nis back. To just shoot all the raiders after, like, mark for deathing them or something like that. But instead he feeded, which was fine, and killed all those raiders, which was good. But my Denegro was far enough back that he didn't catch my caster. So I was able to move up and counterfeet, catching his caster within 12 of mine.
Uh-oh.
Which is an important figure.
Why is that important?
It's her charge range.
Okay.
I can guess where this game's going.
And then I tried to clear the zone again and failed. At this point, if I had succeeded in clearing the zone, I probably would have just scenarioed out. But I didn't really want to grind for the remainder of my 20 minutes on clock or whatever. So he went on his turn again and spun in place aggressively. Because I had pretty much handled the Nis Hunters at this point. They were fixing their side of the board, but they were just too far away to matter at that point. And so when the turn came back to me, I was just like, yeah, okay. So I ran up an arc node, to see it, to make sure I'd hit the mark for death before I risked charging Denegra in. So mark for death, boost to hit on his caster, connects. All right. Charge with my caster, boost to hit, minus, he was camping a bit. I think I was minus 5 and I rolled a 5 on the 3 dice. I was like, well, that's bad. Buy and boost, hit again, boost damage, and do several points of damage, and then I roll my Dark Banishment, which was a 4, which was enough to get her back over to the Bane Thralls. For
death.
For finishment, yes.
That's scary, though. You're like, I just need to do some damage so I can move her to where I want her.
Yep.
Oh, God!
I can't double boost. If I could have boosted it more, I would have, but it was already 3 dice, and I just need to roll a... better than a 5, which I feel like you probably should. But it was fine. It was fine. Then the follow-up attack worked, so that's good.
Why was the mark for death important?
Because otherwise I need a 12 to hit her.
Yeah. She wasn't incorporeal on that turn?
No.
Okay.
I'm just not going to go rolling 12s. And also the Bane Knights then need lots. Or the Bane Thralls need not lot, more than I want to hit her.
Right.
8s or whatever it is.
Had she been incorporeal on the previous turn?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. But you'd want mark for death either way.
No, for sure. I was just wondering.
So that was our round one. 5-0. Felt pretty good about that.
Yeah, off to a great start.
Sending the Irishman into the, what I believe was then later called the drinker's bracket.
I was going to say, we like to call that into the cups.
Indeed.
All right.
Okay, so round two, you guys get matched up against Team Denmark White.
Yep. Oh no, it was the White Denmark team that had the as black as they could get captain, because that's the one we played against.
I feel like they messed that up. They're trying to cover up their Christensen ship.
Indeed,
we got to figure that out.
Yeah, was his name, I think.
The matchups were Mike played against Simon Fiora 2 versus Butcher 3.
Mm-hmm.
You played against Stefan.
I would have bet on that, too, by the way.
Lich versus Haley, 2. Craig played against Lawrence. Kruger, 2 versus Terminus. Chad played against Jan.
Yep.
Madrak, 2 versus Gorshade, 2. Boom. And Billy played against Paul. Kane, 2 versus Vale, 2. Lots of twos in this matchup.
See, everybody thought I threw Chad to the wolves that game, but I was like, Chad, I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up dropping you in front of a Krix player, and I know you can win the Gorshade game. And he's like, yep, that's true, because he's got the Witch Doc Croc, so the Banethralls don't get to make more Banes, because his front line is always undead, and he's got a crap load of Scattergunners. And he actually, there was a point in that game when he just straight had it won and did it wrong, which he'll tell you. There is a point when he was base-to-base with a flag, and Gorshade was right up there as well, but that didn't matter, because Chad just needed to dominate one more time to win. There was a Pistol Wraith in contention in charge range of a bomber. So, and the Creel Stone was still alive.
So he just needed to Spirit Chase?
Yep,
and
he didn't Spirit Chase. He charged with the bomber and then went through a ghost. And it was like, Spirit Chase.
Did he just forget it was incorporeal?
He was low on his clock.
Yeah. But.
Just order of activation problems?
Yep. So he did what he, because he's practiced that game, he's played that game many times against Dave.
Yeah.
And with the Witch Doc, that's a very winnable matchup for the Trill player. Very, very, very doable.
The Croc does so much for Trolls, mm-hmm. specifically.
It's also
is really surprising, given that its big feature, right, is that it gives tough, right, when you look at it. And you're like, why would Trolls ever want it?
Undead is the better attribute of the two.
Also, absolutely. Fearless.
Yep. No, I mean, I agree. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, when you first look at it, you're just like, why would Trolls play this?
They're already tough.
I think the Scattergunners also have a huge in that matchup, mm-hmm. particularly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He's like, all bands, the Scattergunners are just like.
Yep. Scattergunners are good with Madrex Feet.
So, do you remember at all how your pairings went in this round? Do you remember the order that they got picked?
I'm pretty sure. Did I win again? I feel like I won this one.
Well, didn't you go? Oh, you meant.
He means won the role for picking.
Like, didn't you go 5-0?
He did.
He's just having memory issue, memory lapse. Did I win? I think I won.
Maybe not, actually. I remember losing a lot of those die rolls.
Man, sweet notes for next year. Take notes.
Mm-hmm. Particularly if you're going to be drinking a lot over the course of the day.
Yeah, I feel like I lost this one, and I dropped Mike first, and then they dropped Simon and Stefan there. He selected Butcher. I was like, can you win that? And he told me yes. Leaving the Haley 2 player down. He had Haley and Kane. Stefan was actually a player I was kind of excited to meet, because his two lists were my Kane list and Billy's Haley list. So we got a kick out of that. So that left him down, and I had a plan for dealing with it. Was Incursion, so I was pretty confident in him playing Haley, and I was pretty confident in my Asphyxius versus Haley game. So I put myself and Craig in down, and not wanting to play against presumably Kruger, he picked me, leaving Craig, and then they dropped both Krix players on Craig. And I gave him the Terminus matchup. I felt that Kruger could handle Terminus in Incursion.
Seems.
And then they got to select the final two, so they put their Krix player on Chad and the Legion player on Billy.
So what specifically about the Kruger versus Terminus matchup did you like?
It's Incursion, so right. Like his feet is a lot more powerful and alive in that scenario than others.
Stops him for a turn and. Right. Scores out of flag.
And the army that does not have any guns, giving their whole army -2 speed is kind of a kick in the nads.
Sure.
And pushing him 3 inches back.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, Electrical Storms are typically good against Terminus lists.
Electrical Storms are solid, and he's got the Primal Getarix, which can kill Terminus on full camp.
Sure.
Why didn't Mike drop... I'd like to ask him why he didn't drop Harbinger versus Butch 3.
I don't know.
Because the book, an immortal book, is really good against Butcher 3.
Yep.
I guess it's not really immortal if you get Silence of Death on it, so you have to kind of keep it back. But
Silence of Death is a big problem for Harbinger.
Yeah, I guess.
But is there a reason? Is it just that Mike said he wanted Butcher 3, or that you picked that player, or that over the Signar player to go up against?
Yeah, he felt more confident in that matchup than against Haley Double Stormwall.
Yeah, okay.
So I was very focused on my game this time, so I didn't really have time to glance around and see how the other ones were going.
Well, this is a 3-2. This was pretty tight. So
in my game, the Stormwalls, or I got to go first, blessedly. I ran everything, splitting my army as evenly as possible. Knights up to one flank, thralls up to the other, witches up the middle to go either way. He gambled because he left one flag almost completely, like, with nothing to go for it. He could have reallocated one Stormwall that direction. It was the best he could do. And that was off to the right where all my Bane Knights were. And then the middle flag he could get most of his army to, and then the far flag was where the Gun Mages were coming in, so on the far left is where he was strongest. I ran up Gorman and hid him behind a house.
True line of sight?
Yep. The flag that he needed to disappear to make a game of it disappeared.
Well, that's a good plan on his part, then.
Yeah, it worked out. Worked out.
Was it the middle flag? Because that one is the average.
And he didn't kill any Bane Knights. He started shooting Blood Witches as soon as he could. Then, let's see. So eventually, he feeded on me, and between the feet and the Stormwalls and the Gun Mages and just not being able to engage when I wanted to, pretty much all the Bane Thralls died. I lost almost all the Bane Thralls. Bane Knights still untouched. Blood Witches about half strength. I had used my Arcanodes and Excarnate to kill two of the Black 13th. Ryan, I got her before she could Mage Storm.
Oh, that's huge.
She Mage Storm once just onto a pod to block.
Just to block.
But before she could Mage Storm an actual target, I knocked her out with an Excarnate. And I did the same to Lynch. Yeah, and I just ended up making Banes with them. My Bile Thralls were just soaking up shots. I didn't expect to get a Purge that game, and I didn't. So after that turn, and then during his feet turn, I kind of moved Cankerworm in position to start getting to a Stormwall the next turn. Looked like some of the Bane Knights would be able to get to the Stormwall too, despite the covering fires that were out there. And I had also, during my feet turn, parasited that Stormwall because it was available. So after his feet turn, the Parasite was up. I had Admonia move up and take off the Arcane Shield on there. She only removes enemy upkeeps like a champ.
Yep.
And take D3 damage for your trouble.
Yep.
And she's fair and balanced.
And I put 3 on Cankerworm, so I got him in there, armor pierced for a good amount, and then he takes his dice minus 3s with the Replicator. The 3, 2 more of those. He knocked out almost an entire grid on the Stormwall himself. One Blood Witch was able to charge, and then another to run for Gang. They did another 8-10 points of damage or something like that. And then the 3... I think I got 5 total Bane Knights in there once Tartarus had cursed. And they scrapped it with a couple to spare.
It's really bad for the Epic Haley player to lose a Stormwall without your feet.
Yep, so I knocked out the Stormwall without feeding, and I was still holding my feet at this point because Gorman slunk out from behind the house and was like... I'm still here, and blinded the other Stormwall.
Oh, no.
True line of sight type of thing?
Yeah.
Nice.
And you said he was avoiding killing your knight. Well, this was that game, right? Where he avoided killing your knights the whole game.
Still no knights dead. Yeah, I was at 11 knights at this point.
So your feet wasn't even particularly strong unless you kill your own guys, just because it's all thralls at this point, right?
Right. Yeah. I have an entirely thrall-based feet.
Right.
So on his next... And he had scored 1 point on his feet turn.
It's kind of a win for you.
On his next turn, he lit up the other flag, moved the Stormwall further away from the knights, the blind one, and got Haley up to dominate the flag. So he was up to 3 points.
Managed to kill Gorman on this turn?
Yes, he did kill Gorman. Okay. One random gun mage shot came and knocked him out. Otherwise, he had a focus to boost the pod.
Sure.
He also... Well, the pod ended up killing Malevis, I think. Feels right. So on my turn, my goal is to kill the other Stormwall and contest the flag so thoroughly that he can't score any more points.
He's sitting on 3 right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Cankerworm does his double scuttle and ends up base-to-base with the flag, pretty much engaging 2 gun mages. I feeded and parasited, charged that storm wall with 5 or 6 banes, reducing its health almost to zero. I'd also returned some blood witches to try to get into the gun mages to do some damage there. None of them ended up connecting. So Tartarus charged a pod that had been sitting in my back line so he could curse the other storm wall and get some knights in to finish off the storm wall, and then the remainder of them ran in to engage gun mages and get near the flag. Edmonia and Tremulous ran around the wreck and based it within 4 inches of the flag. And that was it. So I had Cankerworm in there, 2 Withershadow Combine, one of them too close to TK out, the other one not, but both in cover, and then several Bane Knights and a few of the remaining Blood Witches. And some Gun Mages had been killed from Bane Thralls engaging them in Free Strikes and a few various things. So he was down 2 or 3 Gun Mages, but he still had Junior Squire Haley and a handful of Gun Mages. Haley got some bad dice, but I don't think he could have cleared. I don't think there were enough possible attacks to clear everything. He ended up not being able to get rid of Admonia, who was in cover. Like, Haley just whiffed on her, and then she eventually stabbed her to death. But then, anyway, didn't clear it and was facing the wrong direction, facing away from my everything. I signed 2 to Cankerworm to try to headbutt her down. He failed to do that, so he just moved out of the way. Tartarus cursed her. I charged her with a few banes, and she went...
Dang it. That's not flashy enough. You were supposed to have Cankerworm turn into a giant vacuum and suck up the wreck marker and shoot her with a big gun.
I thought about it. But she was engaged with stuff because she failed to kill it.
It's no Starburst cannon. If it's not the Starburst,
I don't know.
It's just funny whenever that guy removes a wreck marker, because I just imagine him like transforming into a vacuum and just going, wee!
He's doing it Kirby style?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, caster assassination number 2.
Yep, 2
That's
caster
so
kills
weird
in.
For you.
That's 2 more caster assassinations than I've ever seen you perform.
And I've got one control point so far. I had 1 against Anto.
You're doing really bad.
Yeah, that's
no
really
no tiebreakers though, right? Like in this format.
The closest tiebreaker after strength of schedule is total number of wins.
Team wins.
Yep. Yeah. So not control points, kill points, not really relevant.
Yeah, they come in after total number of team wins.
Okay.
Right. I mean, still important.
Round 3 was against Germany Black.
You'd want to... Do you at least know how the games ended for us?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mike lost. I saw Fiora and Butcher dueling at the end, and Butcher was still alive. So Fiora died.
Yeah.
Then I saw...
Bad duel.
No caster wants to duel with the Butcher.
Craig said, by Craig's report, he was in a dominant position in Incursion, a position so dominant, in fact, that he was going to score on his opponent's turn and then his own turn to win the game, but at the same time just ported Ketterix into Terminus and ate him.
He's like, I'm just going to do this.
Ketterix, go distract them. And then Ketterix was like, did I do okay? I was like, yes, you did fine.
Chad, we know you said lost.
Yep, Chad came down right to the wire, but ended up losing his game. And then
Billy.
Billy.
Must have won.
Must have won.
Yep, he beat Vale 2 with Kane 2.
Who, Vale 2? I'm going to go with Vale 2. Probably got shot to death by Kane.
That seems like a fair assessment, but I couldn't say for sure.
I'm pretty sure it probably says on the WTC site.
It does.
What happened?
The game farthest from me.
All right, so yes, round 3, you're against Team Germany Black.
We lost this. I know we did lose this role because I felt it was very important.
I was going to say, I was actually watching this live. I'm kind of a nerd. I set my alarm. I was getting up like at 5 in the morning or whatever it was here when these were going off. And I remember looking at the pairings for Germany Black, and I was like, ooh, I don't love these matchups. It seemed like they had a little bit of an advantage for pairings-wise.
So I threw up Mike first, and they presented Krix and Legion.
Looks like Janos with Krix and you think the Legion player? So
well, whoever was on table 2.
Robin.
I'm assuming he took
on table 2 was Christian with Kane 2.
Oh, okay. So they threw up Crix and Signar.
So I'm assuming he took the Crix matchup.
Yeah, and he told me he'd rather play against Crix.
With Harby.
Leaving the Signar player up, so I put down Billy and Craig. Mm-hmm. And they took the mirror, leaving Craig out there, who got pincered between Legion and Protectorate.
Correct. Robin, who ended up playing Vale 2.
And Craig had told me before the event that he really wanted to play against Legion. He was very comfortable with his... No, Morvana, actually.
I know he plays with Brandon a lot, who plays a lot of Legion. Yeah,
very comfortable with his Legion matchup, and he felt confident in it, so I gave that to him with reservations.
Because I know Crump's talked about he doesn't feel like Legion is a strong general matchup for Circle, right?
I mean, it's... When you're the faction that, like, makes funky terrain and stuff, and then they're just like, big middle finger to you.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
And then they elected the final two. They put Chad across from the Protectorate player and me across from the Circle player. I actually predicted that Cassius matchup for myself well in advance of that event.
So the actual caster matchups are Lich 2 versus Harbinger, Epic Kane versus Epic Ailey, Epic Vale versus Epic Morvana, Harbinger versus Epic Madrek, and Cassius versus Eden.
Why did Billy drop Haley too?
Spoiler alert, everybody but me lost.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Good round.
You don't know? Because I would have thought if I was sitting down from another Signar player and they had Kane too as one of theirs, I would drop Kane just defensively.
it's just literally the Mexican standoff scenario.
Just dueling Canes.
Right.
Maybe he just wasn't comfortable with the mirror. Maybe he hasn't played that and he just...
I don't know what was in the other Kane
list. Was he playing double Stormwall?
Yeah, he played double Stormwall.
That seems fine then. Doesn't seem...
The problem is that Haley is scared. Did the Kane guy have Terran in his list? The Kane player?
I don't know.
Don't know.
If he doesn't...
I can look.
That's
on.
Fine.
I know Billy lost to 3 magic bullets to the dome.
Right.
Probably should have. I feel like in that matchup he should probably Arcane Shield Haley. Because if the Kane... What was in the Kane list?
Stuff.
I'm assuming there wasn't probably that much armor cracking in it. Probably like Hammer Dwarves, maybe.
It may have been similar to my Kane list, but I'm not 100% positive.
I'm going to look
that.
It up. Hold on.
So, like, he doesn't really
Germany
have
Black,
that
right?
much stuff to... Mm-hmm.
Germany Black, it is Christian Metz. Christian Metz.
Like, he probably doesn't have enough stuff to crack the Stormwall's armor, even just, like, their base armor.
Sure.
With D-Cell.
Kane can do it, right? He can kill one of them. Or most of
no,
one of them.
If he not beats. Unless he hits it with all of the armor debuffs.
Right.
Oh, yeah, he's got your list, Keith.
Okay, it's just my list. Yeah, it's pretty solid against double Stormwall.
Yeah. I mean, it is your list. It is Old Rowdy, Squire, Boom Howlers,
is
Forge
Ragman
Guard Max.
Is there, or is D-Swapper for Terran?
Ragman is in that list.
Okay, so it's my Kane list then.
Yeah, so that's actually really strong against double Stormwall. I mean, I've seen you take apart Colossals with that list plenty
of
times.
Yeah, absolutely. Billy said he was delaying his feet for a turn. It sounded like he just needed to camp a little bit more with that particular way to turn defeat strategy.
Magic bullets are dice off 3 of her base armor, is that right?
He was camping 1, so it was dice off 3.
It was dice off 3, okay.
So expecting to take 12, took more. But I don't think it cost the Kane player anything to do that.
Right.
Because it was just Rangers probably delivering the magic bullets. Let's see if I go down. So that Mike's game went the longest. I actually didn't see the end of it because I went to lunch.
I heard it was a pretty close game.
But yeah, it sounded like it was close. And ended up just barely, like, Lich was just camping out next to a flag for the last 30 minutes of that game. So I'm guessing... His scenario was what eventually happened. So that's Mike and Billy. And then Craig's game, to hear him report, was close and even favorable for him up until on his feet turn. 3 Warwolves sickening into an angel. The numbers 2 and 3 both missed their boosted 7s to hit when the angel had like 4 or 5 boxes left. And that angel was the one that came in and killed the Woldrath. And so that swung the game, and then towards the end he had a very, very poor assassination that I saw him go for that didn't work. Chad killboxed himself and then lost. And then on scenario against Harbinger, because the Avatar would have been in charge range of Madrek if he moved in. Talking about it later with him, we decided that moving him moving Madrak into the Avatar's charge range and just camping a bunch and putting some dudes around him to be like, come on in, Avatar. You can kill
five dudes,
three Creelstone bearers yeah. and make me transfer once in exchange for me hacking you to bits. A pretty fair trade.
Also not losing two scenario points.
Also not losing two scenario points.
Yep.
And then in my game against Cassius, it was... Cassius is particularly strong against a lot of Krix builds, not as strong against Denegra 2 with 20 Satixis Raiders.
Do you remember what was in the Cassius list?
Yes. Druids, Nis Hunters, Blood Weavers, two sets of stones, two Stalkers, a Gorax, and Swamp Gobbers. So what happened was he ran... I went first, and...
Do you remember the scenario for this round?
It was fire support.
Two objectives. So the two objectives.
Yeah, two flags contested by objectives.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I went first.
I don't know. Every time I play you and you play Denegra 2, you go first.
Yeah.
I've never seen him go second.
Yeah.
I went first and I ran up.
Never heard this start a report like this either.
I actually do love when Keith tells us Denegra battle reports, though. We should actually just have Lance cut one of them and just replace it every time.
He's going to win by caster assassination in this game, so this is not going to go the normal way.
No, Bob, it is pretty true. He did go first, because my Arknode had to run off the line to do what I did.
Wait, Josh, spoilers.
I know, I'm sorry. Spoilers, so it was already on the internet.
He went first, and he ran his Nis Hunters up behind a forest in kind of a clump, which I was surprised about.
Considering he... Is playing.
Did you get a Hellmouth out on him?
I did.
That has Hellmouth.
Everything else moved. Like, Druids moved up in clouds. Stalkers were prowling in clouds.
Wait,
et cetera,
he did
Druids.
All of his guys in the Druid bubble to be immune to Hellmouth.
It doesn't protect the Nis, does
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it's friendly, yo.
Oh, okay. The Nis were way out. Like,
sure, I know. But, like, I'm just saying, the only things you should have been able to target in that game probably were your own stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, they were too far out to be protected.
Ah.
So I ran an Arknode out to just like get a sliver of LOS around this forest to remove six or seven Nis Hunters with a Hellmouth.
At least he got the souls for the... Oh.
And the remainder of them broke. Yeah, they were out of range of the tree and...
Did you get Sylena?
RFP.
Well,
I did not get Sylena.
Right,
but she broke.
Right.
So, the rest of my army, I move fairly conservatively to stay out of like stalker threat ranges and those sorts of things. I ran a couple of Satixis Raiders up into engagement range to force him to try to stay back a bit, trying to keep my scenario options open if possible. On his turn, he moved up and feated. The Druids started throwing some Force Bolts, killing a few Satixis Raiders. The Blood Weavers charged and killed a couple more Satixis Raiders. And the ones that I ran too far up, he collected the souls from, which I felt a little silly about. And then he got a Hellmouth off for moving a few more Satixis, I believe. Sounds about right. All right, so on my turn with his feet up, I've been in kind of this position before against, like, Kruger or somebody who slows me down and prevents me from charging. The Nis or the Raiders are still extremely effective against Circle. So I moved Denegra up, feeded on pretty much his whole team. Desperate paced both units of Satixis, mini-feeded with the one. They moved up and popped a stone out of the big unit and killed more than half of the Druids. The other unit activated and killed most of the... all but two of the Blood Weavers and the rest of the Druids.
Yeah, they're still just 10 inches of threat walking, right? So
11.
Yeah, that's... Why?
Yep.
Anyway.
So I was able to remove... At this point, most of his infantry is gone. The Nis had rallied but were engaged. I'd popped a stone, so he just had one functional unit of stones, the small unit. And the beasts, which were locked in place. So on his turn, he spun aggressively. He did shift a tree forward to cast two Hellmouths to try to get back in the attrition game, which was the I think he could have prolonged the game by not doing that.
Cassius can cast his spells from the tree or from himself?
No.
Is that?
No. Sorry, he shifted a Gallows Grove, little tree.
Oh, okay, okay. All right.
I was confused because he also did not mention Gallows Groves were on the list.
Yes, there were two Gallows Groves on the list. So, yeah, he used a Gallows Grove to cast two Hellmouths to get himself back in the attrition game. But in doing so, the Wormwood was left sort of hanging high and dry with one soul on it. And on my next turn, Denegra just shoveled it back into the Bane Thralls.
She was just like, here, catch. They're like, okay.
Turns out trees are pretty easy to dark banish.
Def 5, arm 15.
16 plus one soul. So I was dice minus 5 on it. I did like 8 points of damage with my charge attack. Moved it back in front of an arc node. Curse of Shadows didn't venom through it to do 8 or 10 more points of damage. And then the Bane Thralls were like, hey, look, a tree. We have axes.
This is like Cassius is bad.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Because the tree gets dark banished into Bane Thralls?
Yep.
Seems like the tree shouldn't get dark banished.
No, I imagine instead that... I mean, he would have had to spend a large amount of his fury, if not most of his fury, to do this, but he could have used Cassius and to just play hopscotch with the tree, or whatever that's called, leapfrog with the tree.
Yeah, that's the thing Old Witch has, right?
Yeah, unseen path to hop the tree backwards. Like the tree would have hopped back behind Cassius, and then Cassius hops back behind the tree, and then the tree hops back behind Cassius again, and he probably would have been safe at that point. But then he doesn't get any Hellmouths, and I kill both Stalkers, and it's probably still pretty bad at that point.
Yeah, no, he didn't sound like he was in a good position, and I didn't watch the game, obviously.
I feel like that matchup isn't that bad at all.
No,
he doesn't give you Hellmouths to play with.
I noticed in the selection process that most often I was playing against my second or third worst matchup. I was never playing like my favorite, like the one I wanted the most or the one I wanted right after that. It was always second or third worst. And that's around where I listed that Cassius matchup for that team. Was just like, I don't really want that, but that's probably what I'm going to end up with.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better for you than playing against, like, Kane 2, right?
Yeah. Should be. I mean, I played against Kane 2 with the Negra. I mean, that's why I prepared for a lot of those matchups. I was just like, well, if I'm good at playing out of my terrible matchups, that's going to be what you want for the WTC, because that's what people are going to give you. So
that's the end of day one.
So I think that's a good place
point.
To cut. But yeah. Before we cut, did you want to talk anything about the meta that you saw over there or the style of play? Or I noticed... This is something Maudlin told me, and he said that there were something that, at least his observation was, that surprised the American teams was there's a lot more assassination going on over there in general. Particularly the Polish were very aggressive in the finals.
I never watched them play, but I did notice that by and large, it would get to a point in the game where I would normally identify, like, oh, this is going bad for me, but if I play in this way, I can at least prolong the game and hope my chances improve. I saw a lot more all-ins a lot quicker than what I would normally expect. So maybe they have a different tipping point for that. The long game's not going my way. Try for the short.
They have a different element of ruin, I guess, or whatever it is in poker, where your stack size becomes too small to...
Oh, sure.
I forget what that term is called. But
I don't know the poker term for it.
But right.
Yeah.
But eventually your stack is so small that you can't meaningfully force somebody to fold, so you have to go all in.
But yeah, like, so from their standpoint, maybe more, this is my 50% assassination and I'll never get one that looks as good again.
Or even, not even an assassination.
Well, to be fair, if the game's going downhill for you, you have a 50%.
Right, yeah.
That's pretty legit.
No, I agree. I'm just, yeah.
I think it's more like I'm going to commit my caster to do some work to help get me back to an equilibrium point, hopefully. So they bring their caster in, but that also risks your caster.
Right.
Because, yeah, I mean, and that's also a valid strategy because, I mean, it was something Walter talked about in his camping articles,
mm-hmm.
was if you can force your opponent or tempt your opponent into committing against your warcaster on a turn when it might be less than optimal for them and they don't succeed, oftentimes you get a win out of that. So if you're like, yeah, I'm losing the long game, I'm going to put my caster in such a position as to tempt an assassination that is likely to succeed, but maybe not, 100%. Maybe it's 80%. Maybe it's 70%. Maybe it's only 60%. And hopefully they go for it, and maybe they fail. And then I win. So maybe that's a strategy that's more often employed over there. And a lot of it was just... So some of it was earlier all-ins, and some of it was just exceptional scenario play, just playing really well to the scenario. And the games were too close to resolve on scenario in some cases.
I kind of described it as a 160-player Masters event to somebody.
It felt, in places, it certainly felt that way. I was glad to lose on day one instead of day two. If I was forced to get a loss, I'd want it to be in the first three rounds instead of the last two, because then you're in the drinking bracket at the end of day one. So I got to stay up late and get in some trouble with the Irish that night.
Ah, silver linings. That sounds amazing.
They were not sad to see me lose at all. They're like, they were excited to get me into some trouble, I felt.
Yeah, well.
And then telling stories about how Jerry face planted over a fallen tree into a bunch of nettles, and instead of trying to fish him out of there, Kieran just kept kicking him until he got up again.
Now that's true friendship right there.
Yep.
Yep. I feel like Josh would be all over that.
I would. That's 100% how I would do it for you, buddy.
Jerry was complaining to me on Sunday about that. He's like, if a friend of yours fell over a tree, would you help him back up? I was like, not if he fell into nettles, Jerry. I'd just kick him.
Amazing.
How does it even happen?
Kieran was just saying that he was trying to walk Jerry home, which was about, to the bunker was about a 5-minute walk, 7 minutes at an average pace. And it's a pretty smooth path. Like, there are no fallen trees over the path. So that at one point, Jerry, while resisting being helped, just veered off into the woods and fell over a log, basically.
Wow. Well, at least he didn't try to shove his keys up his head.
So were the Germans as good as advertised?
They were very good.
Yep.
I feel like this... We're talking about prostitution.
Well, no, I'm curious. I didn't get to see it, so I'm actually genuinely curious. So, like,
I felt like there was a pretty decent parity between top player skill levels across the board.
So, like, somebody from the UK, for example, a top level player there versus somebody from the US versus somebody from Germany.
Yep.
Very cool.
And Sweden too. Sweden had some very good players,
but not the Irish.
No. Well, British.
Well, I mean, if you listen to the Irish podcast, they admittedly say that they're from a very small pond, and they're now branching out into other areas. And I imagine, in the way that they think about the game, I think that they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, there's definitely something going on there. Just certain, perhaps, habits they've formed might hold them back.
Are you saying they're too drunk to
from ever successfully competing in 2-day events, maybe?
So the trick for the Irish are like, okay, we're going to go to all the 1-day events, and we can drink as much as we want after we win.
Right.
Or lose.
Right. And actually, Anthony played a real good game right up until he feeded the turn early, probably.
No, I read those guys' articles. They are really, really bright.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
I think
Drunken Masters.
No, that's Dewey. Oh my God. Anyway, so anything else you want to say about the WTC for this episode, or save it for the next?
No, I'm good.
All right.
We'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of Muse on Minis, and want to remind you to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for more analysis and commentary from John, Keith, Chad, Crump, and the rest of the crew. For more Muse on Minis, visit us on Facebook or check us out on Twitter, at Muse on Minis. And don't forget, we're also at MuseOnMinis.com, with tons of great articles about the hobby we all love.
This has been episode 109? No, 108?
9.
110?
109?
107.
This has been episode 100X.
This has been episode 109 of Muse on Minis. Thanks for tuning in. This has been John.
Crump.
Colin.
Josh.
And Keith.